Welcome to the 148th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome and Happy New Year again. Tonight, we're going to have our dietitian, nutrition professor extraordinaire, Timmery Hagenberger, with us again to do our excusitarian episode number 10, if you can believe it or not. If you've missed the last 9, go back and listen to them. There's a lot of good information, and people really enjoy them. It's one of my most popular downloaded series. Timmery is a nutrition professor at Cosumnes River College in near Sacramento, California, and she teaches students of all ages, as well as has some nutrition classes on her own, writes, teaches, blogs, lectures, has TV appearances, does everything. So we're glad to have her back tonight for the excuse number 10, which is FOMO, fear of missing out. Welcome, Timmery.
Thank you. It's great to be back. I can't believe we are at the end of this series because we have spent time here doing helping people move from their excusitarian ways into doers, so to become doers. And this last one, this FOMO, this fear of missing out, we kept until the end. When I brainstormed with some students at the beginning of the year and were thinking about all this, that was the one that we wanted to end with. And that's great. Laura Duarte is a student of mine, and that's who I featured in my article for this excuse. And she said, oh, I want to focus on this one. I want to take FOMO head on. She said, because at some point, we have to make sure that people realize that they're not going to be doing anything unless they want to do it. And so she really hits on this want factor. And so it's going to be fun. I can't wait to talk about it.
Yep. I mean, you know, we can make time for anything we want to do, but things we need to do, we can really push in the corner. So let's get at it. You know, I mean, obviously when I think back when I first started talking about plant-based nutrition, I had a lady in her 70s, and I can still remember it like it was yesterday. She was on the exam table, and I was talking about plant-based nutrition, and she looked at me and she said, no one will ever ask us out to dinner again if we do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and it's interesting because Laura, too, you know, she had no intention of making these changes. She was just taking the nutrition class to get it, you know, done as a, you know, just a class to get units for her AA and AS before she transferred. And then she started learning and she thought, okay, now I understand the science and the whys, but how in the world am I going to deal with missing out on the food that I grew up eating? I mean, that was, she couldn't imagine it. You know, she said through her brain, she's just thinking, family gatherings, what about at work? Can I go out with my friends? Is this it? Do I have to kiss everybody off? You know, is this the end? Like you said, no one will ever invite us out to dinner. And so she's funny. She doesn't pull any punches. You know, and she said, yeah, well, it's true that you can't, quote unquote, eat the pizza in the break room at work or, you know, the cake and ice cream at a family member's birthday. She said it sucks to go to an event that has food and the only thing that's there that is plant-based is, you know, carrots and maybe some raw cauliflower. And the dip is ranch with, you know, that you don't even want to eat, you know. And so she said it would be much easier to just fall back into the old habits, you know, and jump into that greasy burger or, you know, something, you know, super sweet cupcake or something along those lines and just say it's too hard. You know, I mean, all my life I've eaten this way. So she's funny. And she's young. And she says the only way, she said, for her, step up to the craving, call it out, and choose not to surrender control. You know, she said, I just practice over and over and over. You know, I don't run away from those burgers and cake. I just kind of shut it down. And something that we work on in class quite a bit that I know I've mentioned is this power of 4 seconds. You know, so she says, I use that 4 seconds, that space, you know, between an event you know, walking into the break room and seeing pizza or what have you, and saying, I'm choosing my intentional action. You know, she said the temptations are going to be there, like they are for all of us. But, you know, she said some of it I feel like is willpower. But she said when I feel really good about it, it's when I actually see behind the scenes and I see what these, you know, foods are. It's, you know, kind of a lot of smoke and mirrors. You know, she said, then I don't really have the desire to eat those foods because I know how I will feel afterwards. And she said it just blew her away.
Yeah, I think we talk a lot about in nutrition class, you know, how are things made and why we blame certain things, you know. For instance, you know, apple pie. I asked the students, well, what's bad about apple pie? Is it the sugar or is it the fat? And traditionally, you know, people that go on a low-carb diet don't eat apple pie because they're talking about the sugar and the carbs. But the reality of it is it's the fat. And when you start to look at how, you know, a pie crust is made or how cookies are made with a stick of butter and a cup of sugar, and, you know, all of a sudden it's not quite so pleasant. You know, it's not that, you know, it be, you know, to me, when you start looking at that fat, you know, added to it, you know, it brings everything out for what it really is. You know, so again, I think when people start to realize what ingredients are in things, it kind of helps to sort it out as well.
Yes. And we, you know, the industry is set up for us to be ignorant about that and for it to just be, you know, just the enticing, you know, version of whatever. It's not the, you know, when you bring leftovers home and the whole thing has coagulated, you know, and you're thinking, how, when I was eating this pasta, it wasn't one big piece. What is happening? And it's all the fat that has solidified in the to-go container. And you really see what you were eating. And all of a sudden, like you said, it doesn't look that great. And, you know, but we don't necessarily think about that, you know, at the moment because the donut is hot or the pasta sauce, you know, it's warm or what have you. And so people don't think about it. I remember years ago, one of my students said that they had taken a Krispy Kreme donut and squeezed it as hard as they could, and they got a quarter of a cup of oil out of it, a single donut. And, you know, and I said, well, how many of you guys like those donuts? And everybody raised their hand. I said, how about cold? And they all went, no, those are nasty, because we know how, you know, how it feels. So that's, and she said she thought she was, you know, a bona fide meat lover. She said, but within a month, she didn't have that, oh my gosh, I want meat, I want meat. She said, now then she just saw meat as a food that she just didn't enjoy eating anymore because it didn't agree with her system. You know, she said, I guess I just didn't realize how good I could feel. Because it just, those foods, when I paid attention, they just didn't make me feel well. But she also said that it can be, you know, discouraging to go to places with friends or what have you. And then, you know, you look at the menu and there aren't any obvious options that are just, you know, screaming at you like, here's a vegan section. Now, as you and I have seen, and as everybody is seeing across the country, those vegan options and those plant-based options are coming up. I mean, we're seeing more and more of them. But I always tell my students, don't look at those menus for entrees. Look at them for ingredients. And, you know, if you're looking for ingredients, you say, well, you have broccoli because you have it in this, and you have, you know, tomatoes in this, and can you just put this with this? And as we've talked about, it's definitely not a problem to ask. So I know you've had experience with that as well.
Yeah, it's, you know, most of the time I just scan the menu and look to see what I can put together. And once you start it, then the chef oftentimes just jumps in and, you know, they want to create something. It's like, oh, you know, I didn't think about that, you know, and it looks good when they bring it out and they're proud of it. And, you know, it tastes good to you and it looks good on the plate. And, it's like, oh, you know, I never thought about that before. So it certainly
is something. I was going to add just real quick, something interesting is I did a meetup with the Central Valley Whole Food Group, and Craig, the gentleman who organized it, used to own a restaurant. And we were having a discussion. It was wonderful because he said in the restaurant he had was just like through 2016. So it was very recent. And then in the last 6 months, he's gone whole food plant-based. And he had said, I can speak to restaurants because I have been in that. He said, and when I tell them, so it's very weird, he said, you can actually make food cheaper because you can use the vegetables and the rice and the beans, et cetera. And not only will we be happy as customers who eat this way, but we'll be so excited that we will Yelp and we'll tell all of our friends, and it'll actually be cheaper than if you served a meat dish. You know, and it's so funny because he said most of the time the restaurant people just look at him like, so I can save money and make people really happy and have them share this on social media? And he said, yes, you see, win, win, win. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, so we'll have to say hi to Craig. And then also hi to Ken Bolts from the Humane Society because, you know, he is really demonstrated through going to universities and making vegan cantinas and, you know, vegan segments that he has saved the university food service quite a bit of money. The plates, you know, per plate cost is much less vegan than it is, you know, the traditional ways. And, you know, the way it started was that, you know, he just, when it did start, there wasn't a whole, to keep costs down, they didn't use processed food. They just used whole foods. And that's actually where the price is. You know, if you eat whole foods, you know, produce and whole grains and beans, it's much, much cheaper now, you know, than the package process. You know, when I go to the grocery store, and I've said it a million times that, you know, I'm always scanning to see what people get. And I'm always eavesdropping the person behind me or in front of me what their bill costs compared to mine when I look into their cart and see the boxes of things, you know, the boxes, the jars, the styrofoam containers of whatever. And that's what really drives the price up on things.
Oh, it does. It does. And when, you know, it doesn't need to be a big deal, like you said. I mean, you can go to a pizza place and just skip out on the cheese and get extra vegetables. And a lot of times they don't limit you on those because those vegetables are so cheap for them. And so they're happy, you know, to load you up. Or I know that at Chipotle around here, they will do, if you don't do meat, they'll do guacamole for free. And my students get so excited about that. Really? That's fantastic. You know, so, but people are often just a little bit afraid, you know, to ask for substitutions. But there is no benefit to being a secret agent in this, you know, because not only do you then not get what you want, but it doesn't establish that need and that you know, demand. Because the restaurateurs, they don't know what we want unless we ask them. But when we go again and again and again and keep asking them and keep giving them positive, you know, feedback, then they're going to, like you said, they're going to meet their customers' needs and do the best that they can. There's so much competition in, you know, restaurants. So now I wanted to ask you something about this. One of the other things that Laura had mentioned was when she started doing this, she just she got used to people just looking at her weird, you know, when she was explaining what she was doing or asking her what seemed to her to be insensitive questions, you know. And so she said, I just felt like disconnected. You know, she would be out with her. She is actually on a competitive Olympic weightlifting team here in Sacramento. And so she said she'd often feel uncomfortable when she was out with them because she'd have to ask a million questions, or she at least felt like it when she was ordering, or would take her longer to order, or, you know, people would come at her with, you know, random questions. And so she said she felt the same way at home, you know, that everybody just had a million questions and they all became very interested in her nutrition, but not in a positive way. I will share with you what she has done, but what does that make you think about?
Yeah, you know, what it brings to mind early on is, and actually Victoria Moran had a guest on, and he, he was at once the CEO of Citibank, but he's become a great animal activist. And I think he may have been
Philip
knighted.
Wallen.
Yes. The interview with him, she asked him if he had eaten at, you know, what vegan restaurants when he was visiting New York City did he eat at? And he said, oh, I never go to a vegan restaurant. I always go to regular restaurants because it gives me the opportunity to have a dialogue. So he actually embraced the opportunity to have a dialogue with, you know, about veganism, about being plant-based. And so, you know, I think it's, you know, again, it's just kind of how you look at it or look at it a different way. Embrace it as an opportunity to spread the word. Now, you don't have to proselytize, but, you know, you can answer questions in as much of a, I guess, when you have the answers ready in a positive way. The interest kind of turns from negative to, you know, I think, people become more positive about it and they actually, you know, you can see them starting to turn and kind of question things a lot of times. It rarely ends up negative for me. It usually turns out, you know, positive or they'll shut down the conversation because they don't want to hear anymore.
Yeah, no, definitely. And she said something interesting that I really appreciated. She said, you know, I kind of turn it into a little reminder that I'm staying true to myself and what's important, you know, that it's okay for me to swim against the tide. Because she said she always thinks about when she gets home and how good she feels and how proud of herself she feels and how happy her body feels, because she doesn't feel, you know, sluggish or regret eating that food. And it helps with, especially with family too, but with everybody, the more consistent you are, then the more respect you earn in those decisions. And it doesn't seem to be something that's just flighty or maybe it's just my food that she doesn't eat, you know, kind of a thing. That when you're consistent, then they know that's, you know, a boundary. And then they know how to react accordingly. But if everything's changing up and one day you eat it, one day you don't, and then you try real hard and then you slip off and then they don't really know how to best support you. So I think that's very helpful.
Yeah, I think, I'm really an advocate for holding your own. Everybody's on their own journey as far as how quickly they can, change or make the change, you know, and, you know, different people go different speeds, but I think obviously the health benefits, the quicker you, you know, become plant-based all the way as opposed to, you know, oscillating. You know, I have a student right now that, when she came in, she had, I can't remember, I'm not going to quote her on the percentage she was plant-based, but she had a very accurate percentage for me. It wasn't 75, it wasn't 90, it was, you know, a very specific number. And I asked her how she came to the number, and she basically calculated that when she, you know, she had figured out that when she went out, that would be when she was allowed not to, you know, when she allowed herself not to be plant-based. But in reality, it was starting to slip back into her regular meals, and then when you added up all the times that she was, you know, going out and not being plant-based, it started to really accumulate, and it accumulates in a lot of different ways. It accumulates, it starts to become more, and it also, you know, can adversely affect your health. Because we've talked about before, you know, when you you eat the oil or you eat the animal protein or the animal fat, your inflammation system is, you know, kind of fired up again. So it takes it a while, your vasoconstriction, everything, you know, that happens to you starts to get fired up again. So it takes a while to calm all that down, not to mention, you know, your gut and everything else. So you kind of start a fire and then have to put it out. And so it may seem like, you know, this is a once in a while thing. But the reality of it is it usually starts to become much more than you realize.
Well, and I think we also have a tendency to have selective memories when it comes to food. You know, that we remember, quote unquote, what it tastes like, but we forgot somehow the stomach aches, the indigestion, the heartburn, the food coma, you know, the sluggishness, that wonderful feeling, not of having fat coat the roof of your mouth, you know, the oily, we've all been there, the oily skin, you know, how your rings don't fit because you're bloated from the high salt, your head's killing, you know, those somehow we don't remember those. We just remember, oh yeah, this food tasted so good. And I have more students than not will tell me, oh, at the end of, you know, who do the 21 day Kickstart, at the end, I was so excited about eating, you know, a burger or whatever. And then I ate it and I was so disappointed. It wasn't as good as I thought I had remembered it to be. So I think that's kind of interesting. And I think I mentioned a long time ago about Andrew Taylor, the Spud Fit gentleman from Australia. And I think his wise words definitely bear repeating, because he was speaking at a Dr. McDougall advanced advanced study weekend. And he, during his presentation, he said it was really hard at the beginning, because this is a gentleman who ate potatoes for the whole year. And he said, at the very beginning, I would look at other people, like at work or whatever, eating chocolate cake for a birthday, and say to himself, I wish I could eat that. I wish I could experience that. But, and then he has this whole thing of potatoes, right? So he said, but now when he sees someone eating something that's not healthful, he said, I actually feel pity, because I know the second they swallow, damage is being done. He said, all that he has to do is think about how will he feel a few minutes after he swallows, even if it's just in regret, right? So then he says, what about 10 minutes out? How am I going to feel? Why did I do that? 30 minutes out, I may get a headache or may feel a little sluggish. He said, certainly that night, I won't sleep well. The next morning, I won't want to go exercise. He said, so he adds all that up and he sees it as a flash before his eyes during that 4 seconds power of the pause. And then he said, he's golden. You know, he said, you know, and I added to this that people say ignorance is bliss, but it's actually the path to despair, because when you don't treat your body well, then you need to use our sick care system, and then it limits your potential to do whatever you want to do. You can't do things because your body doesn't cooperate. Oh, we can't go because we have doctor's appointments, or we can't do this because I can't hike because I get out of breath, and, you know, this and that. And so by just zooming back and thinking, wait a sec, I have control over these decisions. And if I am just taken away by this idea of these rich fatty foods are just so fantastic, and you don't really see the whole story, then, you know, you're really cheating yourself. So, but I love Andrew Taylor. I think he makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, certainly when you draw a line in the sand, I think it becomes easier to kind of see things for what they really are.
So what about making your own food? That's something that, you know, we can go out and we can ask for food to be done in a different way. I wanted to add something interesting. We went over the break, over our winter break, we went to an Ethiopian restaurant in town in Sacramento. And I wasn't sure how many people would be able to join us, but I called to find out if they would do oil-free, because they do vegan very easily, but oil-free is definitely something else. And so the owner said, okay, we'll try it. If you can get, you know, over 20 people, we'll do a buffet for you. And we ended up getting 28 people. They did a 5-item oil-free vegan buffet, and we just loved it. It was fantastic. And what was the best part of it, as we're walking out and I'm just, you know, gushing over the owner, thank you so much, this was so fantastic, we really appreciate it. The owner, the woman, as a husband and wife, the woman said, I have to tell you, we tried the food because we were making it for you, and we really liked it. We're not going to do any more oil in our personal cooking. And she said, that's it. We're good. This was tasty. This tasted better than it, you know, normally does. And I'd also mentioned to her, because a lot of their food can be spicy, and, you know, they use a lot of ginger and garlic. And I think a lot of people avoid those spicier foods, and maybe the ones that are rich with garlic and ginger, because they get acid reflux. But when you eliminate the oil, as you've talked about quite a bit, you don't have that. And so I'm sure her, without even letting people know, if she transitioned her restaurant food to using less, and then maybe no oil, that she'd have more customers that truly were able to enjoy the food and then didn't feel weighted down and sick, with the reflux afterward.
Yeah, that's across the board. I get people, I don't like spicy food. It repeats on me, or I have, indigestion.
Yeah.
And it does. It literally goes away. I mean, the only thing that stops me from, spicy food is, when my mouth stops burning, I have to wait for a little bit. But then, other than that, I have no symptoms, at all. And actually, hot spicy food is very, very good for your digestion. People think it's going to be bad and burn a hole in your stomach, but it's actually just the opposite.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic for your whole body. And then, so to bring us to making food for ourselves. So one of the foods that Laura just loved and grew up eating was mac and cheese. And so she was like, that was her goal. I have to make some kind of, comfort-ish dish, And she said one thing that she realized, though, was that it wasn't going to taste the same. She said, and, all I was really looking for was cheesy and creamy. It didn't need to be exactly like that fluorescent dish that comes, made out of the box. She said, but when she didn't have that idea that it had to be an exact replica, then she just took it for what it was, because what she really wanted was a warm, creamy, cheesy type meal. So then she made this baked mac and cheese, and she worked with one of her friends that she met that's also a fellow veg field strength athlete, and they had fun making it. And I know you had mentioned a couple of patients that brought some recipes, their own revised recipes, to the potluck that you just had over the winter.
Yeah, we had one of the students has his ethnic background is he's Polish, and he brought his stuffed cabbages, and he made his own stuffing with mushrooms and beans and rice. It was very, very good. And he made the cream sauce plant-based. I can't remember exactly what it was in. And then we had another gentleman, he is in his mid-80s, and he did an eggplant, like a latke type of deal. And when we were sitting in class, he thought, I can do that. I think I can do that without eggs or dairy, or butter. So he brought this eggplant that was eggplant and onions and celery, kind of a pancake type of dish, which was very, very good. And, he was quite happy with the way it tasted, the Polish gentleman was also quite happy with the way his cabbage rolls, and they were actually a hit. They were delicious, so much that, when we get into our new kitchen in the office, I'm going to have him come in and demonstrate making them. I'm going to be his food prep man. He's going to make them for the class, because they were just absolutely, absolutely delicious. And we're to take a little break and, talk about that. We're really excited. And when you get there, I can't wait for you to see it. But, we're building out the back room as to have a demo kitchen, so that we, we'll have an oven as well as a stove top, and be able to do a lot more, more expansive cooking. Right now, we go to an off-site location, and I have to kind of haul everything in, so it keeps us from baking things and, putting things in the oven. But, hopefully by February, we'll be up and running. And this will also allow us to, video some of them and perhaps live stream. Right now, for our online members, I'm actually recording the audio portion of the nutrition classes, so people can, listen to the audio and the questions and the feedback. So I'm hoping, we'll transition more into, being able to have more video from that as well once we get in our own room and it's not quite so complicated. But yeah,
it's fun.
Yeah. And, and I think that'll be, we have three levels of nutrition class, a beginner level where people learn, and then the intermediate class where we kind of troubleshoot. And I think what we'll do in that intermediate class is we take people's recipes and, you know, make them plant-based, no oil, no salt. And together we're going to work on, you know, family recipes so that we can all share, because, you know, the family recipes are the best recipes, you know, your specialty, you know, what do you make special? And to make that plant-based, you know, like you say, even if it's not quite the same, it is still very delicious, and it triggers those happy thoughts of when you were making it with your grandmother or your mother, or the, you know, the company that you were in when you made those. So, you know, it works out really good. And to be able to share a family recipe with other people is wonderful.
It is. And it makes me think about two things. That is part of my final exam, kind of final activities for my new plant-based nutrition and sustainable ag certificate program here at CRC, that the students pick a recipe that is very meaningful to them and then make it, do a revision, and however many times it takes to get it to a point where they really enjoy it. And it was so fun to be able to see how excited and proud and what a journey it was for everybody to be able to do that. And then they presented to the class, which was, it's just so much fun. And it can be, you know, even as easy as typing into the internet, plant-based whole food pizza recipe, or plant-based whole food chocolate mousse recipe, the work has been done for a lot of these already. People have already tried experimenting with all kinds of different ingredients, and it also makes it better than the original, in such that you can have complete control. You know, you may have loved your, grandmother's, let's say, stuffed cabbage rolls, but she maybe used an ingredient that wasn't quite your favorite. Everything tasted great except for maybe there was peppers or something in there that you didn't enjoy. You can make it exactly the way that you want it when you are at the helm. And like I said, we're, you know, maybe even improving something. My student several years ago, who was, she went back to North Carolina, and with her 93-year-old grandmother, they remade collards and black-eyed peas. And, you know, her grandmother had her whole life used a ham hock, and, you know, it was clearly not plant-based, but my student Michaela had embraced this lifestyle, and she went back with her grandmother and said, "Okay, Grandma, are you willing to experiment?" Her grandma said, "Absolutely." And they came out with a great recipe. And that's actually on my website as well. But you don't have to be stuck in your ways. You can actually just pivot and say, "Wow, how could we do this in a different way?" and be open to that idea of experimenting. And it may surprise you. I would love to taste those cabbage rolls. I can't wait. Maybe we'll even make them for our conference in March. That would be fun.
Yeah, he probably would be all over that. And taking time to pivot. And I think once you do it one time and change one recipe or experiment. You know, when I cook in class, people laugh. You know, one, the reason why I started to cook in class, you know, what's a cardiologist doing cooking, doing a nutrition class? And the main reason, my mother, you know, when I first started doing it, she's like, I told her I'm going to talk and cook at the same time. She said, "Oh my gosh, it's going to be, you know," she's like, "Oh, this is just, it's just be a disaster." And I said, "Well, yeah, that's exactly the reason, because, you know, you want to see, you know, sometimes I forget to put something in. So I always tease the person next to me, you know, I have all the ingredients on the table and it's like, make sure they all go in. Okay. You know, give me a nudge on what, you know, if you see something that's not going in, or I print out a recipe for them and then maybe I'll make it in class, but I'll change the recipe when I get to class, because one, maybe I wasn't paying attention when I was loading the car and I put something else in. And so there's variations on the theme, because we all have, you know, you think you have zucchini and you go to grab it and it's no good. So what are you going to, you know, you pick up something else and, mm-hmm. you know, look in, and, you know, the ability to look in your refrigerator and come up with a meal, that it doesn't have to be verbatim from, you know, a cookbook. The cookbook is a mere guideline. And, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, exactly a quarter cup of something. Maybe you like, you know, a little bit more, maybe you like a little bit less, you know, maybe you like the taste of fennel, but you don't like the taste of something else, that, you know, so it, just to experiment. And once you can just do that a couple of times, then it becomes fun. You know, it's not, you know, it becomes fun. It's not, oh my gosh, am I going to mess up this recipe? No, because it's yours, you know?
Exactly. And that's the whole basis for the Foodie Bar way. I mean, it's that idea of it doesn't have to be perfect. This is just combinations of ingredients that come together. Like you said, you don't have parsley, but you have basil. Let's see. What about making pesto with cilantro? Well, that's an idea, you know, for someone who likes cilantro or, you know, some of the other recipes that you don't, it isn't about exact amounts of everything. And that was actually one of the most difficult parts about writing for writing recipes, because it depends. It depends what I have on hand. It depends, you know, you say an apple, well, apple sizes vary, right? And it's, is that a medium apple? And, you know, it just kind of gets loony. And some people feel like it has to be all about the rules and doing it, you know, in a certain way, but it doesn't. It is just, it's more of a fun experiment, lots of possibilities. And you learn just as much from the oops situations as you do from the ones that go great. Actually, you learn more our nutrition. Go ahead.
Well, it just came to mind, and I want to ask you a technical question. Sometimes when you look at a recipe, especially say you're baking a cake sometimes, or some sort of baked goods, you can do baking powder and vinegar, you know, can be mm-hmm. your substitution, your leavening agent. But sometimes people do baking powder and baking soda and vinegar. Do you have any guidelines for specific things that you make one more than the other?
I tend to, you know, I actually, it was interesting this semester when I taught my plant-based cooking class, we found some interesting experiments where they had used different leavening options for, let's say, a muffin. And so they did, you know, acid, so like a vinegar, and then they did the baking soda. And they did, I'm trying to find, I don't know if I'm going to be able to find it on the fly. I'll have to report back to you. But they had a couple different options that worked out. I know one of them that really was decent was using aquafaba, the bean liquid from the can. That was effective. Something to remember is that baking powder makes things puff, and baking soda makes things spread. So P for puff and S for spread. So that can kind of help, you know, so it depends on if you're trying to get lift or if you're doing some kind of like a cookie or whatever. So if something spreads out too much, then it may have been too much baking soda. And if you want more rise, then adding the baking powder.
Very good. Yeah, sometimes I look at recipes and I'm kind of giggle to myself because, you know, I'm not sure how exactly, you know, was there any method to their madness when they did it. And if you look at certain blogs and certain people that write, they tend to stick to, you know, one certain way. They don't usually vary it too much, but it does vary from person to person. Quite a bit, and sometimes I get a giggle out of it because, you know, I'll see some recipes that is they're kind of one extreme or the other, and it's like, so, you know, how I guess it worked for them, you know, and that may be, you know, part of your own experiment, but I like the baking powder puff and baking soda spread for a good starter, so that'll give people a good hint to get things started. But yep, other than that, you know, experiment, you know. Worst thing that happens is she's like, well, I don't think I'll make that, you know, again. But most of the time, it turns out that, you know, you're quite surprised on how good something is.
Yeah, and it definitely can. Baking is a whole nother situation, you know, where it is more, it can be kind of, I hate to say an art, but definitely where, and not to be intimidating for people, but just realize that sometimes, and it could have to do with the humidity. It could have to do with how long some of the ingredients have sat. You know, if you have baking powder that's old, years and years old, or if your flour, you know, is older or what have you, then you're going to have different response you know, in the oven. And so many of the ovens are not, don't heat evenly. And, you know, so all of those, you have to be really nice to yourself and gentle to yourself when you're doing baking, and especially when you're changing out significant pieces. You know, like if you're changing the flour and you're changing out the sugar, you know, to a coconut sugar or like a date sugar, and then you're changing the egg replacer, and you know, it can be a lot for a recipe. I did find one of them that I had mentioned, and the one that came out, they did a banana as a egg substitute, a flax egg, a apple cider vinegar and baking soda, and then they did the chickpea, the aquafaba, and their best option was the aquafaba. And it was interesting, they said that they weren't too runny or too stiff. And that was, and there was no bean flavor, you know, and so they thought, that was the best. And interesting, fourth place was acid and base. It just didn't, and this was a, like a blueberry muffin. And they said it looked fine, but, the texture was crumbly and dry and the flavor was really kind of bitter. And you know how when you put too much of the baking soda, you can actually taste that kind of bittery flavor. But they said that even the middle sunk in. So, but it, you know, and that was their kitchen, you know, when they were trying something, but it could be different in your kitchen. So, but know that all those different options are, you know, available. And we had made, it was funny, we made, I might have told you about it, a cornbread a couple of years ago. And my mom said, oh, this, she said, it just came out like a brick. You know, I mean, it was just, it for whatever reason, it flopped. And I said, well, did you throw it away? And she said, oh, yeah, there's just no way I could have eaten it. I said, Mom, croutons. You know, so there's sometimes there is, you know, a way to repurpose some of those little baking failures, but just putting your hat out in the ring and saying, hey, we're going to try it. You know, and also, like I had just mentioned, look online, because chances are someone has already done the experiment and they've done the hard work for you to come up, well, we tried it this way, and this way. And that's something that can kind of be frustrating with blogs, because you know how some of those recipe blogs, you have to scroll down and down and down to finally get to the recipe. But some of those actually talk about the trials and tribulations of getting to that recipe. So you can learn quite a bit, you know, or from the comment section of some of those blogs. People leave nuggets of golden information.
Perfect. All right. Well, all right. I think we, I think we covered it pretty good. So.
Yes. Yeah, so let's leave them with, the only thing we may end up missing out on is time in line at the pharmacy, side effects from medication, overnight stays in the hospital, uncomfortable and invasive procedures, feeling older than you are, becoming demented as you age, and I'm going to go out on a limb, Dr. Jamie, and say you and I are perfectly fine with missing out on all of that. So I think if people realize how good they'll feel and just give it a chance and have fun, then 2018 will be the best year yet.
Perfect. And won't be long now that I'll see you in person, and that's great. We'll probably have, I haven't talked to you privately about this, but what I'd like to do is for you and Addie and I to maybe start a bit of a series or intermittently get together and do some troubleshooting. So if you're out there and you have, something that's troubling you, certainly email me and we'll get it in line. But I thought I would take some difficult cases, so to speak, and go through them and get perspectives from both of my registered dietitians, and I'll input on the other end, and we'll put our heads together and see if we can't come up with solutions to difficult problems or things that are bothering everyone else. So until then, thanks a lot for visiting with me again, Timmery.
Absolutely. Thank you. Looking forward to it.
All right. Good deal. Hey, that was Excusitarian episode number 10 with Timmy, and I hope you enjoyed it. I have great news. We are going to have at our third annual Charlotte County Plant-Based Nutrition Conference none other than Dr. Doug Lyle of The Pleasure Trap. He has agreed to come and speak, and we're very excited to have him, along with Tim Marie, who you just heard, and Addie, who's been on other podcasts, and myself. And so we're going to have a great day of speakers. That is going to be on March 24th, 2018, at the Twin Isles Country Club in Punta Gorda, Florida. We're going to have a fabulous plant-based, no oil, salt, or sugar breakfast and lunch, a cooking demonstration. It's in a nice setting, so you can get all your questions answered. So I hope to see you there. We're actually extending it back a day. So on March 23rd, which is a Friday, we're going to have the opportunity to have private consultations with myself, Addie, and Tim Marie for an hour each. So if you sign up early, you can get one of those. Those spaces are limited just because of time. We're also having two yoga sessions that day. So we're kind of going to make a weekend of it. It's a beautiful time of the year here in Southwest Florida. There's plenty of things to do, walking paths, running paths, and all kinds of different water activities if you so to desire on Friday before and the Sunday after. So I hope you'll check it out. You can go to the website at drdelaney.com, and you'll see a link that tells you about the conference as and a little video as well. But it'll link you right to eventbrite.com so that you can click and get your tickets both for the consult if you want or the day of the nutrition conference. So I really look forward to seeing you there and hope you'll check it out. You know, the practice is going fabulous. I'm happy to announce that we're actually into our new kitchen at my office. So we're all brand new kitchen, oven, you know, and so we can do everything right there. So we're advancing and taking our cooking demonstrations to a new level. There's more room. We can also do some yoga in the office. So all my members get this, get the nutrition class as a part of their membership, as well as free registered dietitian consults, all the emails and support they need. Because, you know, this isn't easy, as we've talked on many occasions. Becoming plant-based, especially if you don't have much support in your house, can be very difficult. And let's face it, 95% of the population is not plant-based. So there's a lot of things out there to try to derail you. And, you know, I found that it takes like a year of support. And this membership program that we have going on is a great way to have a social interaction with other people, learn from what they've done, you know, learn every week in nutrition classes. Again, we have multiple levels. Get your questions answered immediately with emails. I'm actively taking people off of diabetic medication and high blood pressure medications because they're taking care of their, they're optimizing their own nutrition and doing quite well at it. So, you know, I've never been happier in a practice to actually see people get better from these things that we never thought they could get better from, you know, diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterol. So it's been great to have this practice. Not only do we have the in-office practice, but there are two online programs as well, online level one and level two. So check out the website. Online level one is all web-based, and online level two, you'll speak with Addie and I monthly. And again, there's a lot of private website content. We're putting the nutrition classes all online. Actually, today for the first time, I videoed the cooking demonstration. So there's a ton of content and support for your plant-based journey and your journey to optimal health and wellness through movement, whatever your choice of movement be. So we'd like to help you in that. Again, go to drdelaney.com. Email me at jamie at drdelaney.com. It's J-A-M-I at drdelaney.com. Hope to see you or hear from you with any of your questions. Hope to see you at the conference on March 24th. Check it out. And until next time, plan strong. Move your body and eat the rainbow.